Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad David Dossie's here, too. David is our good friend. He's my intellectual property attorney. That's what he does for a living. He's an intellectual property attorney. 20 years ago, you would have called him a patent attorney. And today, he still does patents, but that's not all he does. He does a lot of other things, as IP attorneys do these days. He's with the patent firm of Gallagher and Dossie, LPA, and he's our good friend. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Always good to be here.
It's good to have you back. And now I know you want to talk. Wait. Before we go any further, I got some news. Well, it's not news. It's just coincidence. Okay.
Okay.
On this day, 1790, the first U.S. patent was issued to Samuel Hopkins. Are we good at programming or what?
That's right. Nice.
First patent ever in the United States, folks, 1790, was issued to Samuel Hopkins for his process of making potash and pearl ashes, which was used for fertilizer.
That's right.
And guess who signed his patent?
Who?
George Washington and Thomas Jefferson.
Of course.
How about that? Now, how would you like to have that document?
Well, few people realize that patent rights were one of the few rights that were recognized right in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
All the founders felt that that was so important that it was right there.
And little did they know what a big deal that was. I say little did they know. Obviously, they knew it was a big deal because the ability to have liberty that we like we have in the United States, the ability to enjoy property, to grow and inherit and to bequeath and inherit property and to pass it along and to enjoy that the fruits of your labor for yourself and for your family was the essence of what they were doing, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so things like patents, things like which they wouldn't have called it intellectual property probably in those days, but it certainly was part of what they were doing. But I was just thinking, you know, what if you had that patent? I mean, somewhere I'm sure it is somewhere. Maybe that family, maybe the Hopkins family, has a copy of that. But think about a patent that's signed by the president, and let's see, 1790. Jefferson would have been what? What would his role have been? Was he Secretary of State in those days?
I don't know. I've got a replica copy of that in our office.
Oh, really?
I'll have to look.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to get a copy of that. Also, I can't go any further without saying this, David. 1893, Henry Perkey received a patent for shredded wheat. which for me is a great day in history. David.
Sure.
Because you know, fiber is our friend.
Yeah.
okay. So a little bit of patent history there, folks. David, what about this thing that you want to talk about? Building your intellectual property portfolio using your competitors. Is that legal?
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, a lot of people come to us and we'll throw out the word competitive intelligence, and automatically people tense up and think of CIA and guys going around in black suits. But really,
right.
Everyone knows something about their competitors. The more you know about them, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, there's all sorts of different variations of competitive intelligence that you can do on your competitors. But one of the easiest things to gather data on about your competitors is their intellectual property. And it's amazing how often that's overlooked.
Well, what do I want to know about their intellectual property?
Well, a good analogy is, you know, no one would ever go out and buy a building or sign a long-term lease without having a title search done, making sure the property's free of liens and that type of, you know, standard property law type issues.
Right.
And the number of people that go and small businesses that go out and invest a lot of money in bringing a product to market, you know, research and development, only to then come to an attorney and say, okay, is this patentable? To find out that not only is it not patentable, but your competitor may have blocked you from bringing that product to market.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a fundamental thing that can be, you can teach your people in-house to do it, but someone needs to be monitoring the intellectual property of your competitors.
Well, I can see that. And also, it's a way of identifying what they are, what they haven't acquired yet, and where,
sure.
And maybe where the niche is.
Well, and it helps you identify where they think the market is going. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can easily find the types of patent applications they're filing.
Right. Hold on to that thought, Dave. We're going to come back and talk some more about how to build your intellectual property portfolio in a number of different ways with our good friend David Dossie. He's an intellectual property attorney. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. I'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll go there when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes by email every Sunday afternoon. Get you ready for the week ahead. And don't forget all of the other things. Don't forget the blog, too, by the way. The blog is updated every weekday, and we'll send it to you, or you can come and get it. David Dossie is our guest. David is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's my intellectual property attorney, and we're talking about your intellectual property portfolio. And, David, one of the things that when I say that term, intellectual property portfolio, most small business owners probably think, well, what's that got to do with me? I don't have an intellectual property portfolio, but they actually do, don't they?
Absolutely. Every company has some intellectual property. Whether
including a URL. If they have a website URL, that's part of the intellectual property, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, if you have a company, you have a company name.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing any sort of sales, if you've been in business more than 5 years, you obviously have some goodwill associated with that company name. So you have a valuable trademark right there. And, you know, if you were going to sell your company, most companies, it's the book of business that you're selling more so than the hard assets that's owned by the company. And all of that's intellectual property.
Well, you've probably got a logo.
Exactly.
You've got a design. You've got some kind of a design around your name, your business card, some design. If it's just colors, so maybe a line, one line through, you know, underneath your name or whatever. All that is associated with your business. That's all intellectual property. Another thing would be the way your trucks deliver products,
mm-hmm.
the route that they take. The way you've designed your company, that you've organized your company so that it operates in a certain way. So maybe some of the practices and policies that you've established, those are all part of your intellectual property. And David, even though, you know, most of those are not exactly commercial, they're not something that you patent or register or anything like that, there's still things that you've learned, things you've decided, and from any of those could spring something that's commercially, you could single out commercially or patent or register, and you never know where that's going to come from, do you?
Absolutely. And there are things that you recognize as being valuable to you because they save you money, and you wouldn't want them to be in the hands of your competitors.
Right.
You know, so you need to always assess your employment agreements. That's a very important thing, to keep confidential things within the company.
Well, And that's something that you won't do if you aren't valuing your own intellectual property.
Right.
If you just think, well, it's just so many people think, well, you know, I just came up with that idea and it's no big deal. Everybody else knows this or whatever, and it's not necessarily true.
And we have that happen all the time. People in kind of old school industries that feel that they're not doing anything cutting edge, that think intellectual property is only for the guy in the lab doing lab research. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And until you, if nothing else, all your listeners can get online, do their own research, and look at their top five competitors and what type of intellectual property they own. And a lot of times you can get this just by going to their website, and it'll say, you know, U.S. patent numbers X, Y, and Z, or registered trademark of this company. And
They've got any kind of an SM or a register, it won't say registered trademark. It'll just say the R by it, or it'll have the SM or the TM or something like that. That'll tell you that not only do they value this, but they've actually registered it.
Right. And if your competitors have that, and you're not doing anything towards protecting your intellectual property, you're behind the ball.
Right. Well, okay. Now, but how do we, when you talked about using our competitors and finding this information out, what do we do when we find out that they've already basically, you know, registered a certain whatever it may be? Obviously, you don't want to rip off their brand promise or whatever it might be. But if there are other things that could be useful, and you find that they've already done that, but you need to be able to use that type of capability, what do you do about that?
Well, you know, you're in a bad spot, and you have to think about, you need to get a team together to brainstorm ways to either design around their intellectual property, so ways to do what you want to do without infringing on your competitor's intellectual property, or figure out a way that you can work with your competitor to either license what's needed to be licensed or team or partner with them.
Exactly. And that team and partner thing, that's something to think about. That's something that many of us don't think about automatically, David. But the other thing is, don't assume that what they have come up with is the best way to do it.
Absolutely.
And in fact, David, if their patent or their trademark or whatever it might be was issued 5, 10, 20 years ago, there probably is something new under the sun that they could that you could take advantage of.
Absolutely. I mean, technology is always changing, so to think that the way someone did it 10 years ago is still the best way is probably a fallacy.
Well, and especially if you can find out how old that trademark or that patent is. Can you find that out by going to USPTO?
Absolutely. On USPTO.gov, there is all sorts of information, and I encourage all your listeners to work with a patent attorney, and they can show them how to do all sorts of searches.
Absolutely. Quick break. In fact, when we come back, we're going to talk about working with a patent attorney right after these messages. 10 till, I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. A little Booker T there for you. 7 till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend David Dossie. David, give us your website, please.
It is www.invention-protection.com.
And folks, this is not your grandfather's patent attorney website, so I encourage you to check it out when you get a chance. David, if let's say that someone's out there listening saying, okay, Blasingame, I know you said that I've got an intellectual property. I don't really know exactly what that is. Okay, I heard you say that the name of my company is intellectual property, and my website is, and my logo is, and that kind of thing. And folks, I hope you believe us when we tell you these things. And I hope you realize that every day you are doing something. You're making some adjustments or progress or improvements to your intellectual property that are all part of the assets of your organization. And even if you're not going to patent anything, even if you're not, you know, going to come up with something that's going to be the next killer app, David, I still think that every small business out there should know a patent attorney, should know an intellectual property attorney like you, and should meet with them at least once a year to say, okay, here's what we do. Here's where we were. Here's where we are right now. Here's what we're doing. Let them, let you ask them questions, you know, about things and become a little more aware of their intellectual property. And then just sort of establish a little bit of a, of a, of a program for the coming year for intellectual property. What do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. Just like it's smart to meet with your tax advisor, you know, before taxes are due, you know, this is something that you have to prepare for. And meeting, just having that relationship so you can call someone up to go out to breakfast or go out to lunch and kick some ideas past them, it's very important.
Well, do you meet with people, I mean, even only if it's only once a year?
Sure.
Just meet with them, and maybe once a year, just like you go get a physical with your doctor once a year, you meet with your intellectual property attorney, and just talk about let you maybe if you have a client who's in a certain industry, maybe during the year previous you've been paying attention to that industry a little bit. You might have some news for them. It's just somebody else looking out for you.
Well, and that's how it often starts, is they might just want to come in and talk about this, you know, annually, or they'll have been to a trade show and gotten a nasty letter from one of their competitors because of a trademark or patent issue. And, you know, it starts off as an annual thing, but the more people talk about it, the more they realize they do have intellectual property, and you find yourself, you know, meeting more regularly than that.
Do you run into people who have gotten those letters who aren't paying attention to the fact that somebody owns a certain piece of intellectual property and you were infringing on it? They didn't realize there actually was possible to infringe on things?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. That's an area of ignorance too, isn't it, that's out there that a lot of people don't realize that if they don't think that they have their own intellectual property, they probably don't have a high regard for other people's intellectual property.
Right. And people are floored. We get calls all the time that say, oh, I'm just selling some stuff on a website online. You know, well, that's fine. That doesn't mean you can't be infringing someone else's intellectual property by doing that.
I know of a little ice cream parlor that was in one city, and there was a company in another city that had already established the name of that company, and they weren't even doing business in the city where this little company was. This little ice cream parlor, and the company with the same name in another city were successful in getting that ice cream parlor to change their name, even though they weren't even competing directly.
Mm-hmm. And think about the cost of that. For a small ice cream parlor, the cost of changing the signs on their building or all their advertising.
They went out of business, David.
Yeah.
They actually went out of business because of it. I don't know exactly why. But the people didn't check to see who was doing business with that name already in the state.
And it's sad because that to save them that headache would have easily cost them less than $500.
Right. Right, and all they would have had to have done would have been to done a variation of the name or something.
Sure.
Change it to another variation or something. David, give us that website again, please.
It's www.invention-protection.com.
And if someone needed to find an attorney, now you're in Ohio, but if somebody was in Colorado or California, you'd help them find an attorney out there, wouldn't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Or you can always call your local bar association.
There you go. Good one. Thank you, David, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim. Always
See you
fun.
Next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.